You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and beauty, where relevant topics are discussed, where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. On tonight's Perspectives, we're discussing the inner critic. How to know if you have an inner critic, and what to do when you recognize him or her. I think we've all heard that one saying, you are your worst critic. But what does it really mean? You know, what does that really mean? I don't think that's a good idea. Do you feel qualified enough? Don't you need a doctorate to discuss that? Aren't you too old to pull that off? Aren't you too young to give good advice? I mean, come on, you're way too young. What makes you so smart? Do any of these sound familiar to you? Do any of these thoughts sound like your own mind talking right now? Well, that's what the inner critic does. The inner critic is there to put doubt into your mind on a daily basis, to make you question yourself, and to wonder if you really are good enough. Hey, Bill, what's up?
You know, Ashley, I think that you are a mind reader, at least for me anyway.
Really?
Because, you know, I love this topic because it's me. I am my own worst critic. I'm a perfectionist. And that means that for a lot of things, if I don't think I'm going to do it well, then I just don't bother doing it at all. but when I do something, then I want to get it right the first time. And I get mad at myself when I don't do it. And a lot of those things you just said is, you idiot. You know, you're not smart enough to do this. You're not, you know, old enough to do it. You're not young enough or, you know, just whatever it happens to be.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people listening tonight can definitely relate. I think people that are shaking their heads saying, I don't have one. Come on, get real. Get real with yourself.
We all have it to a certain extent.
Yeah, everybody does. Even people like me that meditate a lot and really check myself. I still have it. I still have this voice, this doubt creator. You know, I do have a beef, though. I really want to go sidetrack real quick. Is that when we were heading in the studio, you said that you would not use my hairbrush. I don't understand this.
Okay, so I will not use your hairbrush. What are you talking about?
You said you wouldn't use, but you said you would use your mom's hairbrush, your girlfriend's hairbrush. But if it came to my brush, you wouldn't trust.
Well, I would use my mom's hairbrush because we share the same DNA. Okay. And as far as me and the girlfriend, well, we swap spit, so we might as well swap.
Oh, yes, I know that.
You know,
but I mean, come on, I have a clean. I don't have any dandruff. I don't have any lice.
Too.
I do not.
I can see it crawling
this
in your
hair.
This
all started because on the way into the studio, there was a comb on the ground. Okay, it was on the ground, it was on the sidewalk.
And Ashley, being Ashley, she goes, hey, do you need a comb? Yes, Ashley. How did you guess? You know, I didn't know I needed one until we saw it on the ground there. So,
if I wouldn't have pointed it out and washed it off and cleaned it off and then handed it to somebody, they would have known that it had been on the ground ever. It would have been a new comb.
I would not accept a comb from a total stranger.
From me? I'm not a stranger.
And I wouldn't even accept a comb from most people I know.
Really? So now you're definitely not
unless,
accept a comb
unless,
from
unless it's still in the package.
Okay.
And came in a... Okay. Wrapped present.
I mean, I'm not going to take a toothbrush from somebody, but I don't think a comb is that big of a deal.
It is a big deal. That's just basic hygiene. Besides that, you got cooties, Ashley.
You cooties. You got women out there borrowing each other's mascara. We're all talking about using this, you know, using a brush.
Well, that's between you women, okay? I'll let the ladies deal with that issue, okay?
Okay.
I would not accept mascara from somebody, but that's just me.
Eyeliner, no?
No? No eyeliner, no mascara, no lipstick.
Okay, well, we're going to have to get you some more then, so you can't borrow mine, so you'll have to use someone else's.
Oh, darn.
Darn. No, so we're talking about tonight. I just thought that was funny. I just had to bring that up. So we're talking tonight about the concept of the inner critic. You know, how to know if you have one and how to recognize them. And they do kind of come in a format. I mean, I know that my inner critic happens to be a male-type inner critic, which is interesting. It's not a female yelling at me. It's actually a male voice talking to me, which is interesting because I guess I created that myself just to get my attention even more so. So what does the inner critic do? Okay, and I know y'all are asking that because some people go, I don't have an inner critic, and other people are like, what is she talking about? But the inner critic's most important job is to do what? It's to create doubt. Without the doubt that's created by our inner critic, we wouldn't bother listening to our critic. Because it's all about a doubt, fear-based concept, right? And so when you're undermining yourself and second-guessing yourself and worrying and stress out about things that you can't control, doubts there. And doubt can be about really anything. Am I a good enough mom? I mean, that's a doubt that a lot of moms have out there.
I think there's probably not a mother out there who doesn't have that one. I think all moms share that to some degree or another.
Yeah, am I a good enough mom? Am I raising my kid well enough?
I mean, and dads too. Maybe not to the extent that moms, but dads too.
And maybe that's something that we need to pursue, because maybe men just aren't that open about talking about, am I raising my kid right?
Well, we're not supposed to be open with our emotions. It's not, you know, masculine.
Ooh, masculine. You know, it's rawhide.
Guns
a totin. But I mean, high noon.
You know, you got to man up.
Guns
right?
a blazing.
You know, you've heard that phrase, right? You got to man up. Well, you know, that means you got to suppress your emotions a lot of times.
That's true. I mean, I do. Yeah. I guess you're right. I mean, most men, it's hard for them to cry or show any sort of emotion, much less maybe I'm not a good father. And I think a lot of men are dealing with that right now, especially with kids that are younger, also in their teenage years. Also, raising daughters is hard. Am I raising my kids all right? You know, am I there for? I mean, I don't, you know, and I think also the division of understanding and the whole men is from Mars, women from Venus thing, which I don't really know if I agree that.
No, but men are from Mars and women are from Pluto.
Pluto. Okay. Really? We're in the solar system, huh?
Like deep outer space.
But we're actually in the solar system.
Well, on the very edge.
I don't know. I'd have to question that. I think we're from another system.
Well, how about the Andromeda Galaxy?
There you go. There's a couple of galaxies that I would probably put women on. Seriously, I mean, especially Amazon women. But no.
Right.
When we're talking about, am I a qualified mom? You know, am I good enough? Is my work good enough? When people go to work and you're doing your job, is your work good enough? Am I qualified to do what I'm doing? I mean, I think that's interesting because a lot of us question that too. It's like, you know, if you have a master's, you're over there questioning, do I need the doctorate to be smart enough? Are they going to take me seriously when I get another piece of paper? But really, is that really what you feel, or is that the doubt inside of you?
That's the Howard Wolowitz syndrome.
Howard Wolowitz?
From Big Bang Theory.
Oh.
You know, because he's the engineer, but he only has a master's degree, because in engineering, you don't need a PhD.
Correct.
So the rest of them always dog him for not having a PhD.
Because he didn't have to go to school longer.
Right.
And they're always messing with him.
Yeah.
You don't have a PhD. Yeah, I see how it is. I get some of that stuff. I get a little bit of that flack, too.
And on a more serious note, too, I mean, you know, do you have a college degree at all? You know, there's, you know, in today's society, today's economy, it's becoming more and more like the basic bachelor's degree is what a high school degree used to be. That's the minimum which you have to enter the workforce.
Gosh, that's hard.
You know?
And we make it so difficult on ourselves. You know, and I think the biggest thing about how good you are based on what certificates and what degrees you have, I just think that we've created this concept that people can't be wise in things that they can be wise in. I just think it's antiquated.
I do too. I mean, I'll take you back to when I used to work for the insurance company. Okay, so at the time I lived in Texas. And you have to have the state license to be an insurance agent. Now, that's the way it is in most other states, too. You have to be licensed to be an insurance agent.
Right.
And so I got the basic insurance agent's license, and then later on I got underwriter license certificate, got some other professional degrees, too. And I applied for a consultant's job within the company, and I got turned down because even though I had some college, I had not graduated. In other words, I left college to go in the insurance business.
Mm-hmm.
Before I graduated, and so since I didn't have that scrap of paper, then I didn't get the job. And I asked the hiring manager, who I knew on a professional basis. I said, "Look, I would really appreciate you giving me some feedback. What are the things I can improve on? Well, you need to get your college degree." And I'm going, so I've been working for the company X number of years. I've got all these professional designations. I don't understand. Well, you know, for one thing, the college degree means that you know how to communicate. I just, you know, I'm like, I just got through writing training materials and
for everybody else in this corporation.
I write memos and things like that on a daily basis. You know, what do you mean I need a college degree to
communicate?
Anyway, I could go on and on, but yeah, I mean, it's that's, and I don't want to denigrate the value of a college education. I mean, most people can benefit from a college education.
Well, and you went back and got all your stuff.
Oh, yeah. I went back and got mine. And finished it, and although in a different field, but...
But I do think that we put a lot of weight into that.
Maybe too much.
Yes, and I think maybe we put a lot of too much weight if we don't have enough, and too much weight if we do have enough.
But then there's the internal critic, you know? So I can imagine, of course, I mean, because this happened to me. Well, because after that happened, it's like, well, gee, I don't know if I should bother applying for that position because I didn't finish my degree, and they're just going to tell me no.
Exactly. And that's the issue. And that's the inherent problem with when we talk about education is it's one thing to have education. It's another thing to wonder if you need more. But to sit there and devalue yourself and doubt your own self based on the fact that you don't have another certificate or another master's or this, I think that's when your inner critic's really coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And having a lot of fun on your expense. So stay tuned. When we return, we're going to be talking more about what the inner critic does. And we'll begin to actually... kind of figure out exactly what they look like and where it begins. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim up bar. Glass of perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. On tonight's show, we're discussing your inner critic, how to know if you have one, okay, and how to recognize him or her. It's interesting because I think a lot of times we hear that saying, we're our worst critic. Where does that come from? Well, it comes from this whole concept of having an inner critic. I mean, it's one thing to have other people hold you back. It's another thing to have yourself hold you back. Period. End of story. I mean, you can control yourself and stop yourself more than anybody else can.
You know, if I recall, Ashley, we did some series of shows a while back where our mind puts limits on us.
Right.
And, of course, for our listeners, if you want to listen to previous episodes, please go to Spreaker and also AshleyBurgess.com and iTunes and type in Ashley Burgess. We're up to, what, 177 episodes now, Ashley?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So in those previous episodes where you talk about your mind puts limits on you, I think this is kind of an extension of that.
Most definitely.
Your inner critic, can really play havoc with you.
Well, yeah, because the inner critic wants to do what? It wants to create doubt in your mind. Okay? It wants Bill to doubt Bill and Ashley to doubt Ashley based on the fact that we're not good enough. You know, I think it's interesting because we question ourselves if we're qualified. We talked earlier about how, you know, parents question themselves if they're raising their kids right. Are they good enough? Do we have enough, you know, background? Do we have enough to apply for this job? Do we have enough education? And, you know, doubt is the inherent building block, I feel, for the erosion of our spirit, but also for the erosion of our determination. Because when we begin to have doubt, what happens? We lose that feeling of spirit of knowing that we can do anything we put our mind to. And guess what? We also kind of devalue our determination because we don't become as determined. We actually kind of sit back and say, well, you know what? I can't do it anyway. I mean, there's really no, I shouldn't waste my time. I mean, this is really a waste of time. And when we lack determination, it's always based on the fact that we're doubting ourselves. And it's funny because we take ourselves out of the game. I mean, we really do. It's not about the outside haters. It's about the hater that's inside. And that's key because I think that's interesting. I've dealt with it throughout my life. And I think anybody that has a normal childhood, I'm not saying a bad childhood, I'm not saying a great childhood, I'm just saying a normal childhood, is going to have doubt. It's just the way it is. I mean, unless somebody just, you know, blew rainbows up your butt and had unicorns around you at all times, you're going right. to constantly doubt yourself, at least to a degree. Now, on families that, if you were brought up in a difficult family situation, with a family member personally putting you down on a day-to-day basis, your doubt and your inner critic is going to be a lot louder. It's going to be a lot louder. Some of you listening tonight, y'all have a hard time getting off the couch. Okay, it's hard to leave the house because why? Because what are you going to do anyway? I mean, you're not good at doing anything. And I know friends like that, and I know people like that, that I've actually had to go over to their house before and talk to them about that kind of stuff. Because it's hard. It's hard when you doubt yourself, and then you had other people doubting you in your life. It's like a double-edged sword there.
Well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
Most definitely. If
you doubt yourself, other people are going to pick up on it, and they're going to notice that, you know, you've got a lack of confidence or... lack of self-esteem, and some people in this world are mean enough to capitalize on that.
Oh, yeah, and control you.
Especially, in, like, say, in an office environment where maybe it's a little competitive.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, and control you and, yeah. And kind of and play you against yourself, you know. Oh, yep. No, I'm there for you, but nobody else likes you.
Yeah.
Everybody else is out to get you, man, but I'm the only friend you got, so, you know, don't worry about
that.
And
then as soon as your back is turned.
Oh, yeah. And then there you are. You've divided yourself from everybody, and now you're talking to the one person that's talking crap about you to the whole office.
Uh-huh.
Just because you were scared because you didn't think anybody liked you. I mean, that is really what it is. It's like doubt is, it serves a role. It serves the role of holding us back, right, from having our life dreams. And not to mention the fact of having our life dreams, but just living and living a dream. You know, living our dreams, trying to create something. And it seems like doubt is the force that holds us back. I mean, we don't need armies to take us down, do we? I think we're already against ourselves anyway sometimes. I mean, you couldn't have done it anyway. I mean, you'll never amount to anything. I mean, to me, that is a strong enough army. You don't need anybody else against you.
You know, actually, we're live on the station tonight. We're also live on Facebook and on Twitter. And our listeners, you know, somebody out there has to have gone through this where you're your own worst critic and self-doubt seeps in. And it just, like, it snowballs on you. And I actually would like to hear some of the stories from our listeners.
I agree, because I've gone through it myself. And, I mean, think about it. With anything in life, when you're trying to move up the ranks in something, you're trying to create something, you're trying to create a life dream or a goal that you have, all those instances. I remember the first time I'd written my first book, and then I rewrote it, and it was 442 pages, the first rough draft. And then I ended up, you know, scratching it, cutting it back, rewriting it, and getting it down to about 165 because I didn't want to add another burden to people's lives.
Wait. You went from 442 to 165?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, because I knew that nobody...
That's an editing process.
That's almost 500 pages, you know? And I realized, like, this isn't a dissertation. I realized that I was a new author at the time. And so the last thing you're going to want to read is, like, War and Peace called Live Your True Life, right? War, what is it good for?
I was going to say, you know, I mean, it's good bathroom material, but you're not going to be in there that long.
Yeah, I hope not. You might have a problem. If you have erection longer than 48 hours, please call your doctor.
Right.
No, but honestly, yeah, I knew that people would only have a certain amount of time to read it, so I get it. But when I first put it out there, I had self-doubt. I mean, I literally waited longer than I should have to get it published because I just started questioning myself. Is this going to go anywhere? Is anything going to happen out of this? I have a third book out and I'm writing my fourth book, and I would have had that done too had somebody not have pulled out on the last draft on this fourth book. However,
boo hiss.
Thank you very much.
But don't give up, Ashley.
But I'm not giving up. Okay. That could have made me doubt myself too, based on the fact that I worked really hard and it was done, and then they took off, and then I started realizing things do happen for a reason. Sometimes the last thing you want to do is be in a situation with somebody when maybe they're not as respected, for example. But on the other turnaround, it didn't work out. And so I have to look at it from that point of view and realize that I can produce something miraculous as long as I don't doubt myself. And sometimes it's hard because I think that after the placement of doubt, we start doing this, like, personal beat up.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we're going to personally beat ourselves up, and you begin to battle yourself. I've said this before, but when you're in a fight with yourself, you have no time to fight others, right? I mean, it's hard, because if you're over there giving yourself an uppercut and you're trying to, like, hit somebody else, it's not going to happen because you're battling yourself. Yourself is hitting yourself. And in anything like that, you're actually kind of slapping yourself upside the head. And we're really excellent about beating ourselves up.
Because we know ourselves, and therefore we know our weaknesses.
Oh, yeah. We know exactly how to take ourselves down, how to punch, how to kick, especially below the belt.
Yep.
Coming up with things that, guess what? What happened in the past? What happened in the past? Because something bad happened in the past.
It's like, aha. I know. It's like that movie. I know what you did last summer.
You remember what happened last year?
By the way,
a
movie I actually saw, by the way.
I never saw that.
You never saw it? Wow, there's a first. A first in history perspectives, a movie I saw and actually did.
You've been seeing all these new movies, too, and the only movie I want to see that's out right now is SpongeBob.
Oh, for crying out loud. You would. I'm not surprised you would want to see that.
That would be a quality movie, okay? A quality movie in my eyes. is anything that's like a good kids film, especially anything with dolphins.
Of course, I'd rather see that than 50 Shades.
Oh, I'm not seeing 50 Shades. No.
I couldn't even get past chapter 11 of the book.
Read some of the book?
I tried.
Oh,
I tried,
God.
And I couldn't get past chapter 11.
Things are really bad. I didn't know how bad they were. You actually tried to read some of
the book. I was challenged by a female acquaintance, and I said, okay, you know what? I'll be open to it. I'll check it out, see what the hype is all about. And it's just like, okay, this is too cheesy. It's, you got to get this away from me.
Yeah, I have no wonder desire to see that film. I think it's funny how women are like asking men to read it, and women are like bringing men to the film when it's really quite derogatory to females. Really isn't that good. I mean, but I understand that a lot of women want to be, they want to be dominated, especially in the sexual in the bedroom. I understand that a lot of women have the fantasy of being dominated, having all these crazy sexcapades, right?
Right.
But on the opposite end, I mean, it doesn't bode well. I mean, what happens to her I know and all the reviews that I've read?
How much of a tangent do you want to get on that? Because I can just go off on that subject.
How much of a tangent you want to go?
And I'm being very serious, okay? If you read this book and or watched this movie, then as far as I'm concerned, you are disqualified from being a feminist.
Wow. Holy hand grenades.
And I am dead serious about that.
Well, I mean, it is kind of like being a feminist and saying, hey, I get Penthouse every month. I mean, it really is. I mean, really, seriously, right? I mean, it's the same thing as a woman saying, yeah, I put the Penthouse on the counter for people when they come over to look at the magazine, but I'm a total feminist.
But, I mean, here's a young woman
he looked at me
who is emotionally vulnerable and gets,
hooked up with some derelict.
Hooked up with a man who is in his 20s and a billionaire. Of course, he's rich. All fantasies, the guy is rich, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My buddy took his wife to go see this film, and he said, well, my favorite scene was when the guy has a helicopter, and they're going to take off in his helicopter. Like, you wanted to be the dude with the helicopter. He's like, oh, well, maybe.
But see, just to kind of wrap this up, can you understand from my point of view as a male, I see that on the silver screen, and it's like, why should I even bother trying to, get a mate? I'm not a billionaire. I don't have helicopters. I can't compete against that.
True. I mean, it's so many different levels of that film, my gosh. I mean, we could do a whole dissertation on that, I think. We'd have to go see
it. But the movie's not worth taking up that much airtime for, as far as I'm concerned.
Let's get back to doubt.
That's right.
There's a lot to doubt here. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, when we return, we'll be talking more about the role that doubt plays and how you actually start personally beating yourself up. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. We're talking tonight about your inner critic, how to know you have a critic, and how to recognize him or her. The critic does one role at the beginning. It's an important job. It actually creates this doubt in your mind. It creates the doubt, and doubt is the building block of what? It's a building block of eroding your spirit and your determination. When we have that lack of determination, we don't really try. Because why should we try? It's not going to work anyway. And I always hear people talking a lot about their haters, like so-and-so's a hater, so-and-so hates on me. But, the hater that we have inside can hurt us more than anybody from the outside. And the role that doubt serves is really to hold us back. It's to hold us back from living our life dreams. It's to hold us back from just living what we want to do, to be who we want to be. It creates this force that holds us back. And there's no army, there's nobody that can actually do any better job than it can. And after this placement of doubt that it does, because it just places these little seeds of doubt on a daily basis, here and there, there and here, you're not good enough, this is never going to happen, you don't know anybody that's achieved this, you're not a good enough mom, you're not this, you're not that, you begin to battle yourself. Okay, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, is you end up fighting yourself, and you can't fight yourself and live your life at the same time. I mean, we know exactly how to take ourselves down, how to punch ourselves, how to kick below the belt, and how to really upset ourselves based on the fact that we know things that we've done in the past that actually didn't work. And there's things that happen in our past that doesn't shine the brightest of lights on us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, think about it. You know, like a parent that has too much to drink. You know, we all have that relative or that friend or that acquaintance
yes.
that has had too much to drink.
Yes, 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 yes.
You know what I'm talking about? And they're at the dinner table and in front of everybody, they talk about when you were a kid, you used to wet your bed. Right? Or you need to see a therapist because you wet your bed. Or instead of the drunk relative, you know, that gets mean and spouts off crap, the relative is you. About how bad you are.
Ah, yeah.
About what you did. Remember back a year ago, Bill, when you tried to make something of yourself by doing this and it never worked out? And basically, that is the below the belt swing that you take on yourself. So instead of the drunk relative going, oh, I remember when Ashley was 4 years old and wet the bed. You know, I remember that happened. And you're over there going, God, I was four. And thanks, my friends are here. This makes, and your friends are over there like, you wet the bed. And you're like, yeah, you wet the bed too, I'm sure.
At 4 years old, sure you did.
Yes, it happens, right? It happens. Yeah. Everybody listening tonight has wet the bed at least one time, okay? So, but it's like these deep, dark secrets that you don't want everybody knowing, right? But the funny thing about it is the wetting of the bed is just the tip of the iceberg that's hidden from everybody else and it's hidden in you. So you know all these things that you weren't able to do well. Oh, I remember when you tried to do this, Ashley. And, you know, and you just beat yourself up based on that. And with every proverbial blow that you bring to the head or any undercut shot that you bring to your body, you know, you bring up the things that you did when you were younger, the things that you did maybe a long time ago, maybe even yesterday, but the things that you're ashamed of doing, the things that you don't feel good about doing or never came to fruition. And I think we've all been there. I mean, the longer you live, there's things that didn't work out. You know?
Absolutely.
And think about this. I mean, I know people that, for example, I know a friend of mine was left at the altar.
Okay. Oh, literally.
Yeah. Like
wow.
They had like the wedding and then she never showed up. Like
that's insane.
Yeah. It actually really does happen.
Wow.
And, you know, it took him years and to get over it. I mean, and basically it was hard for him to even meet another woman because he was like, well, I was left at the altar. I mean,
like,
that's
literally.
That's the worst that could happen. I mean, so anytime he would get close to a woman, the first thing he's thinking about is standing there at the altar with all his friends and everybody at the church, and she never shows up. And all of a sudden, you know, her sister comes in and says that he needs to talk to him, and then it's over.
That's,
I mean, and think about that repeating in your head
I'm
over
speechless.
And over again.
I'm speechless right now. I don't even know what to say to that.
I mean, you would think somebody would have enough wherewithal. I mean, the word balls came to mind, but enough wherewithal to sit there and say, hey, I don't want to marry you, and I don't want to put you through a bunch of pain and agony. But some people don't do it. They wait till the last minute, and then it's too late, and then there you go. And think about trying to get back in the dating game based on the fact that you were left at the altar.
Yeah.
You're no good. They didn't want to marry you. Nobody wants to marry you. And so think about doubt and your inner critic just going off. Anytime you got close to a woman thinking this could be the one, all of a sudden you got flashbacks of, oh, well, think about what you did. Think about standing up there, you idiot self, at the altar. Think about that. How did that feel, dumb butt? You know what I mean? And that's what your inner critic starts saying to you. And you start thinking and believing it. And you go, man, I'm just going to go on and cancel this date. Nothing good's going to come out of this. I'm just going to get hurt again. I'm done.
Actually, I've got nothing. Good night, folks. You know, that's the show right there.
Isn't that awful?
Yes.
But think about how awful it is, too. Like, on the other side, you have that guy living through that. I mean, he's gotten better, and he's actually gotten married, and he got over it, but it took years. And it took a lot of therapy and a lot of counseling, too, because he had to get past that inner critic that kept saying, you're not good enough. Nobody wants to marry you. Nobody wants you. So just get over it. And that's what we start creating in our mind all the time. And we allow this doubt to start seeping in. And the next thing you know, you can't get off the couch.
You know, Ashley, I at the church that I go to, and of course, you and our longtime listeners know, I mean, I am active in my Christian religion. Did you know that, okay, the word Satan, all right, you know, in modern day has come to mean the personification of evil. Okay, in the Christian sense, okay, there's you know, good, which is God, and then there's bad, which is Satan, okay? But did you know the original Hebrew meaning of it is the accuser? And in the sense of, you know, that voice in your head that says, "Oh, you know, you're not a good Christian." You know that you know when it's time to give a tithe, you shorted that just a little bit, didn't you? Oh, you're a good little Christian, aren't you?
Right.
You know, it's that voice in your head that that is putting that doubt in you.
Oh yeah, and, I totally agree with that.
And that while you were saying all that, that just popped in my head all of a sudden. You know, so what you're talking about is actually not really a new concept.
No.
It's just that, you're doing a good job of putting it together.
Some of the puzzle pieces.
For our society, yeah. But isn't it interesting, though, that the personification of evil in the Judeo-Christian religions, is actually translates as the accuser.
The accuser.
Yeah.
The judge, jury, the executioner.
There you go.
Is our internal critic. And that's so true. The accuser, I mean, think about it. I think we both have yin-yang within us. I mean, I think we have good and we have the evil
absolutely.
Type.
Yeah, we're all capable of good. We're all capable of evil.
And that evil side, a lot of times, is our inner critic trying to keep us down, trying to hold us down. You're never going to amount to anything. I mean, you know, think about it. Think about a criminal. Let's think about somebody that's committed a couple of crimes and they're trying to go right. You know, they're trying to do the right thing. And you know how hard it is probably with the pressure, but also themselves thinking, well, I'm never going to make anything out of myself. I'm never going to be more than this, you know? And the longer the critic beats you down, the less strength you have to stand up. It's just the way it is. I mean, you begin to let things go. And
it's like, why bother fighting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just let them go before even trying to do them. You know, you'll never make it happen. Why even try to do it? And this rolls right into what you were talking about, is that the critic places judgment on everything you do. It's the judge. I mean, you don't need Judge Judy in here. You got your own judge, you know. You name it whatever, you know. Give it a little hat, you know. I mean, because it's there all the time. I mean, you got him sitting on, you know, you got him sitting up on a high riser over there telling you what to do every second of the day.
Now, real quickly, Ashley, I can maybe see some of our listeners being a little confused. Now, you're not talking about your conscience.
No.
I think that's two different concepts, right? The voice in your head that's telling you that you're not good enough is different from the voice of your conscience.
Your conscience is something totally different. Your conscience actually is normally quite quiet, but what we're talking about, your inner critic, is normally derived from your ego. So there's a difference there. So your conscience, you have your conscious, your subconscious. So your subconscious really is the collection of everything that you ever heard and saw and looked at, every single thing. You don't even realize what's in your subconscious. Most people don't. Because, you know, your subconscious is like collecting things since you were born. It was collecting things when you were in the womb. That's why, you know, when kids are under the age of 2.5, it's not good to have TV on around them, because they actually think what's ever happening on the TV is actually happening in their home. Okay, so there's a lot of therapy that has been done with children that thought that they witnessed a rape, or there was something that went back to the beginning of their childhood that they couldn't understand. Well, if you go back to hypnotherapy, it finally was figured out in some of those cases that it never happened. It wasn't a family member. It was on TV.
That's horrible.
Yeah, because they can't
imagine going through that.
They can't interpret the difference. That's why you don't want kids watching TV under a certain age. I can't stress this more than I can right now, is that the last thing you want is your kid surrounded by TV at an early age, where everything that goes in stays in. And, you know, everything that goes in now stays in too, no matter what your age is. Okay, that's just the way it is. But that's why it's so important to keep your subconscious clean, meaning only introducing certain things into your mind, really being careful about the movies you go to see. And what implication those movies have on you. I mean, just because you're an adult doesn't mean that you need to be desensitized to everything. So stay tuned. We'll be talking more about the conscious, more about the subconscious and your inner critic and what that means to your ego. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in 2 shakes.
I can lift you up. I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be.
Get in here and give us your perspective. We're listening. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about the inner critic, what it means to have an inner critic, what the inner critic does, and how to know who they are. You know, right before the break, Bill had brought up a good question about the concept of consciousness versus the inner critic. And yes, these are totally two different things. Most of the time, people are running from their subconscious at all times. Your subconscious is completely always collecting every single data, every single fact, every single TV show, every single soundbite you hear is collected in that subconscious. And you will have it for the rest of your life. Okay? That's why sometimes you have random memory recall. That's why when you go to bed sometimes, instead of going to bed, you hear the Clorox commercial. Not because you love the Clorox commercial, but you heard it 3 hours ago and you weren't paying attention, and now you're going to talk about it.
Or that annoying jingle.
Yeah, because subconsciously it's in your brain. Even if you try to avoid it, guess what? It goes in. Okay? And so I think the funniest thing is when people don't even watch the castle doors, when they leave the TV on when they're going to bed. You got to look at yourself as the castle, right? So if you're going to bring up the drawbridge and protect the castle at night when you're asleep, when you can't protect yourself, turn the TV off. Turn the radio off. I can't even believe some people leave the radio on all night long. How do you sleep with that? But also, it's like every single song and every single word that's used is now permanently in your brain.
You know, my mom can't sleep without the TV on.
Oh, geez. It actually is one of the worst things to have on, and it actually helps that inner critic get more power over you.
I was gonna say, how much time do we have left in the show? I think we could spend it on my mom, bless her heart.
We'll do 5 more hours. Let's keep
going,
guys. Got everybody out there listening can actually relate. So we're on Facebook and Twitter right now, Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, and Ashley Burgess as well. You know, also the biggest thing too is that we're also on Spreaker, so any of the past shows that you're interested in, check it out. You know, allow those to go into your consciousness. This is good quality material that's not bad to have, and it can help you thwart these issues sometimes. So think about that. So everything goes in your subconscious, and the conscious is, a good example is this. Think about a computer. Okay, you have all those hard drives and all that kind of stuff, and the hard drives and all that stuff is your subconscious. It holds everything, and your conscious is really what's on that desktop. Just right on the initial desktop. Not the stuff that you got to open and use another program and open that. I'm talking about the stuff that's initially on the desktop is your consciousness. So that's what you're dealing with on a daily basis. Now, the inner critic, now that's another thing altogether. The inner critic is actually related to your ego. And I know a lot of people think, and we've talked about this on past shows as well, is a lot of people think that the ego is, you know, talking about how great you are and how amazing you are and amazing Mets, how great you are. But no, it's not at all. It's actually normally tries to break you down. It tries to knock you down in size, okay? Because the ego is normally this thing that tells you about how not good you are. You know, the things that you're lacking. And this is where the inner critic comes in, because they're really kind of one and the same. And I like to use the inner critic because I think the ego has a lot of weird definitions out there, because people don't understand what the ego does. People think you're supposed to get all big chested and you're the man and you're, you know, the big man on campus with a big ego. No, a lot of times when people have this outwardly big ego, it means they're internally very insecure. Okay, when people treat other people badly, when people look at you and will not speak, when people look at you and go, that's normally a sign that they don't even know how to communicate with you, because they feel like they're going to have to compete with you. And so the inner critic is, that's the one that drives that ego to sit there and say, that person's not going to talk to me. This is a bad idea. I mean, I feel insecure. And it places all this judgment on everything you do. And, you know, if you think about the doubt and you think about the beat up and the battle, then you think about the judgment, because the critic is your judge. It's your jury. It's your executioner. As Bill said, it's like the accused, because judgment is when you tried something, right? Or you haven't tried something, or you did something and you're not happy with it. It's the process of just not allowing it to be. It's the process of defining it. So if you go out tomorrow and apply for some jobs and get some interviews, let's say, and you're trying to get a better job than you have, and you're trying to do some stuff, some more stuff with your life, and one of the interviews didn't go the direction you wanted it to go, or maybe you didn't hear back from them yet. Instead of sitting there thinking how bad the situation is and how awful you did, we place all these expectations and all these judgments, and that's what your inner critic does, is that it's judging what you did in that interview.
Yeah, and I can relate to that, because over the past couple of years, I've applied for a lot of positions within the radio station group that I am primarily based out of. And I can't tell you how many times I've written to the hiring manager of whatever, you know, position or station it's at. And, you know, hey, I'm, you know, interested in the position. Here's an air check tape, and you know, here's my skill set level. Here's my resume. You know, I'd like to schedule an interview with you. Okay, well, you know, we'll I'll listen to it and get back to you, and never hear from him again. That has happened countless number of times, and it got to where it did affect my self confidence. It's like, you know, another position came up just recently. I'm like, should I even bother? I kind of know what the outcome is going to be.
I remember that.
Yeah, I told you about that. Yeah.
And it all worked out. But at first you were thinking, it hasn't worked in the past, so why should I bother? I mean, this is probably just another thing that I'm going to put energy out to, and then it's just not going to come to fruition, and then I'm going to wonder, and they're never going to get back to me. But it all changed. But what did you do to change? Did you just work through it and just say, no, I'm going to move past this doubt, and I'm just going to make it happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to move past it. I just thought, okay, you know, at the end of the day, what's the worst that could happen?
There you go.
They're going to tell me no, or actually, in their case, they're just not even going to bother to tell me anything. but you know, I'm no worse off than I am now.
Well, that's true. And the thing about it, too, is that I think it's interesting. So had you not had moved past that doubt and tried it, and instead you kind of just accepted the judgment from the high court, right, that comes down to you and says, yeah, you're the one, you're ridiculous, this is stupid. And, you know, the funny thing is that the judgment is the final job that the critic does. And then you know what it does after that is it moves into making fun of your regret. You get what I'm saying? That
yes.
It makes fun of your regret. So not only does it kind of hand you this judgment and say, you know, you'll never get this. This is never going to work for you. Think about it. You've applied for these many jobs and it never happened for you. This is just going to be another losing streak. It's just going to be another waste of your time. So they hand down that judgment, right? But then right after the judgment, guess what? They make fun of your regret for the things you wished you'd done. So then not only are you screwed on one end, now on the other side, you're over there going, oh, man, I didn't do that. And now you're saddened by the regret. And then your inner critic says, well, you know, you're going to live with this regret for the rest of your life. I guess you're never going to be happy.
So, you might as well just, you know, get under the covers and never come out.
Yeah, and now it's like once it hands this judgment down, now you're down for the count.
Another good example of this concept is the dating scene. You know, it's like, you know, he or she, you know, turned me down for a date again. I get shot down 3 or 4 times a week or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I keep giving out my phone number or keep inviting people or whatever, and it just doesn't work out. Might as well just not even try anymore.
I know people like that too. I know people that are in their 40s, like their early 40s and their mid 40s actually. I know some people in their late 40s that never got married. They weren't ever that good with women. They tried, but they just weren't that good with women.
Yeah.
And some people are like that. Some people it's just hard for them to date. They don't really know how to go by it. It's not that they're gay. They just have difficulty dealing with
women. Yeah, okay. I mean, nothing wrong with being gay, but...
No, they're not... Nothing wrong with that. But, I mean, like, they're actually by themselves because they're just too scared after a while to try to meet somebody because it just hasn't gone very well.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of sad because it starts tainting your whole life. And I've even been around those same people where a girl will be kind of, like, talking to them in a situation, and they don't even realize it. They don't even realize that this person's... They actually just kind of
They don't realize that the other person there's actually given them the opening.
Yeah, because they don't
it. It's practically a neon sign. You know, please ask me out. That's something I in my own personal life, I had... it took me a long time to learn, is that, you know, the female is practically begging me to ask her out.
Exactly.
And she's just waiting for me to do it. And you know, and I don't understand that, but...
And you're like, well, hey, let's talk again sometime.
Right.
I gotta go. Okay, have a good night.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. So stay tuned. When we return, we'll be talking more about the inner critic and judgment and how you can spot your inner critic. Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in 2 shakes.
You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, to the home of intelligence and beauty, where relevant topics are discussed, where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, tonight we've been discussing the inner critic. You know, how to know that you have one and how to recognize them. You know, the beginning of it is the inner critic creates this thing called doubt. And doubt is one of the biggest things that the inner critic does. It creates this doubt, undermining you, second guessing you. You're second guessing yourself. You're undermining yourself. And eventually, guess what? This doubt actually allows you to hold yourself back. Hold yourself back from achieving goals and dreams that you've thought about. From achieving things that you thought you could at one time, but now you don't believe you can so much. You know, and it's interesting, after that holdback, all of a sudden you get the beat-up scenario. You start beating yourself up. You start fighting this personal battle that, guess what? When you fight yourself, it's really difficult to win because you know how to basically beat every option that you're going to fight. I mean, that's just the way it is. When you're fighting someone that you know so well as yourself, you're going to probably win. You know, and then eventually this inner critic helps you create this thing called judgment. It creates judgment on everything that you do. It's your judge, your jury, and your executioner, as Bill would like to say, your accuser. And it happens in the high court. The judgment comes from the high court within you and tells you what you're doing wrong, what's awful, what's never going to change, and what you might as well just not even try doing. And then guess what? After it's gotten you on the ropes and you're down for the count, and they've already said, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, bam, knockout. Guess what? Then the judgment and then the inner critic starts messing with you about the regret that you have. Because guess what? You haven't tried all these dreams. You haven't tried doing things that you really wanted to do because of the inner critic. You've believed all this stuff and eventually believed the judgment call that you can't do it. And then now you're left with this regret, and it's going to toy with that regret with you for the rest of your life. That's part of it. And I'll give you a little more, what is it? What would you call that? The sprinkles on top. Because your inner critic begins
the cherry on top.
The cherry, the sprinkles.
Oh, sprinkles. Okay.
You like cherries? I like sprinkles.
Oh, how about both?
Okay, we'll do both. And whipped cream.
Although, I have to be honest with you, Ashley, I don't know. I don't think I'm good enough to kind of participate in this segment.
No sprinkles for you.
You know, I don't have your education and your background, and I don't know. I'm probably not good. I'm probably not smart enough.
You're probably right.
And good night, folks.
I know. No, I agree with you, but that's what we always do. Our inner critic does that all the time with us. I mean, think about just in general. Think about walking to a room of your peers and thinking all these different things about yourself, all these judgment calls, all these thought processes. You're not good enough. You know how hard it is to walk into a room of your peers based on that? Much less, you go to this critic is around 24/7. I mean, it's like having a mean, mean, ugly Judge Judy around all the time telling you just how bad you really are.
And how much of a moron you are.
And how much of a blooming idiot you are. You know, and it's true, and it's like your inner critic begins to, guess what, critique others around you. So not only does it critique you, but because it's been doing such a good deal of critiquing you for all this time, it begins to critique others. So you begin to make comments to others about how difficult things are and how hard they are to overcome. You begin to give the advice you hear in your head to others, right? It's funny how we do that. Like when somebody goes, what do you think? Do you think I can do that? And you're like, you know, I don't know. I think it's really hard. And, you know, I just don't know if that's going to be able to be accomplished. Not, I don't want to sound harsh now. I'm just saying, I just think that that might be difficult for somebody in your position to do.
Actually, I actually did that to a mutual acquaintance of ours.
Really?
And you know who this person is.
you did?
How much can I say here on the air?
You really did.
Let's okay. It was another person.
Mm-hmm. No, start there.
Who wanted to have a radio show?
Okay.
Okay. And kind of like you, I went to this person's office to set up a studio.
Okay.
But he went ahead and bought, you know, the recording software.
Okay.
You know, ahead of time. And he bought you know,
the wrong software.
Well, not necessarily the wrong software. Just it was meant for more for music recording rather than, you know, voice recording.
Right.
So it had a lot of bells and whistles.
Okay.
And I couldn't help myself. I actually said this to him, and it's like then I did the facepalm thing. I actually said to him, "Well, this software it's a level of complexity that I would not have chosen for you."
Jeez.
I think you know who I'm talking about.
Oh my!
And you can imagine his reaction.
Did he freak out?
No, he didn't freak out. He just laughed.
Oh, he
it's
did.
Like, and it kind of became a running gag there for a while. So it's a level of complexity that I'm not ready for.
Sure that you're able to take care of. Well, I mean, there is certain levels of things when you know somebody's not necessarily technically savvy, and they go and they
and
get
that was one of it.
They go and get something completely out of their stratosphere of manageability.
He has to have a personal assistant just to turn his computer for him.
Jesus. Yeah. See, that's the key. That's the key. But I'm talking about like when you have somebody go to you and say, "Do you think I could do this?" You know what I mean? And we've all had this happen before. And I know some people listening tonight also had their parents do it too, where they're like, "You know, I think I'm going to go get this degree." And the parents are like, "You'll never make anything out of yourself. You're never going to make any money. This isn't going to work for you." I mean, and you know why the parents said that to them about getting that art degree? Was that probably mom or dad thought about getting that art degree. And their parents told them how stupid that was. Because you're never going to have money.
You're not going to be able to do anything with it.
Yeah, and so you learn something and you believe something and you have judgment enough that you start, you know, giving pellets of judgment to other people. Like, I know a lot of people that come to me and, you know, they want to start a radio show, they want to do stuff, they want to have a talk show kind of career. And I give everybody, you know, the same advice. And I help everybody totally without thinking about anybody's limitations or anything like that. Because you know what? I don't know.
Because you don't see that person as a threat.
No, but a lot of people do.
A lot of people would, yes.
And a lot of people like to try to pinpoint things about people. And I've had people try to do that to me, too, and that's fine. And I can see through it. But a lot of times people can't see through it. You know, they think that person's really their friend when in actuality that person's just part of their critic. You know, that person's actually voicing their critic. So it's interesting how our critic, though, can start making critiquing
others. Say it fast three times,
criticalization.
Actually.
I think I just made up a word.
Criticisms.
Criticisms, yeah.
Criticisms.
Can start creating criticisms on other people. It's very interesting because we have this tendency of we judge ourselves every day. So why don't we start judging everybody around us and see what decisions they're making? Are they making bonehead decisions? Are they being wise? Are they being, you know, not wise? Are they being erratic? And so, you know, I think once we got to this point, we can now begin to know how to know that we actually have a critic. How to know that you have your critic. And I think the first thing that I would say as a feeling that you'll have is the feeling that you're being held back, but not necessarily other people. You know, when you realize that you're not necessarily being held back by other people, and I think that's something that everybody tonight might want to think about. Because if you really truly think about it, even if there's a couple of people around that really, you know, don't really want to see you be that successful, and you know it because you know it. I mean, you either consciously realize it just because you get body language, you understand it. Maybe they've told you, you know, "I don't really like you and I don't really want to see you do that well." You know, unfortunately, most of the time it's undercover. So if somebody tells you that, you know, be thankful because at least you know where they stand. But when you feel that you're holding yourself back, this actually applies to everybody because everybody to some degree holds himself back. We all do it, whether it's the habits that we create to hold ourselves back. You know, maybe it's the unhealthy eating. Maybe it's the unhealthy drinking. Maybe it's, I know I need to go to bed by 11:30 or midnight to be able to wake up and be a part of society the next day and to be able to understand what my job entails. But I got to bed at 3:30 and, you know, I had to get up at 6 and I don't feel very good and I'm going to do that every day, or I'm going to go home and instead of taking care of what I need to do, I'm going to drink a 6-pack of beer and I'll get around to it. And so sometimes the judgments are actually hidden behind what we start doing. So we actually start creating these things that actually hold us back. So maybe if I didn't drink so much, maybe I'd get more done.
So do you think that's maybe your self-conscious, you know, kind of acting against you there? It's like, you know you need to get to bed at 11 o'clock and not drink, But
you still do it anyway.
You still do it anyway, you know, because maybe on some level,
you're not going to be good at it. You're not going to do well at work anyway.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. I mean, everybody looks down at you at work anyway. I mean, what does it matter if I get there on time? What does it matter if I do my job? You know what I mean? But sometimes sometimes the critic, okay, so this is another thing too that I think is interesting before we go to break. Sometimes the critic is so eloquent and so smooth that you forget that the critic's there.
Ah.
And you don't hear it anymore. And so most people listening tonight are there. Most of you listening tonight at a certain age, once you get past about 25, you don't hear the critic anymore because the critic's been going on for so long that you don't even realize it's the critic.
You learn to tune it out.
Yeah, but you still live by it.
Right,
so every single thing the critic says, you live by it, but you don't hear the critic say you're no good. Instead, you go, yeah, six strings sounds like a good idea tonight. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll stay up till 5 a.m. No big deal. I'm not missing anything. And you know why we do this? Because we're not good enough anyway. And that's what the critic's telling you, but you don't hear it anymore. And that's when we create these boundaries to our own success based on judgments that we've agreed to. So stay tuned, because when we return, we're going to be talking about more about how to identify and understand that you have that inner critic. Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim up bar. Glass of perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, right now we're talking about how to be able to identify that you have an actual inner critic. How to know that you actually have somebody in there being a judge, jury, and executioner for you at all times, you know? It's nothing like being able to have someone tell you how bad you are. That's always very helpful. And, you know, right before the break, I illuminated something that I think a lot of people might not have realized until now, is that the older we get, the more the critic seems to go into this kind of white noise, okay? So instead of me actually hearing, Ashley, you're no good at this, isn't going to work. Or instead of hearing, you know, they're not going to like this. Why even send the email? Instead of that, guess what? I feel a certain way, and I just don't send the email. And it's because the critic's spoken, but now I've gotten so used to that critic. I've gotten so used to this person telling me what I can and can't do for so long that I don't really hear the voice anymore. It just kind of goes in and out. But yet, it's funny how I act upon whatever that voice is telling me. So right before the break, we talked about how when you feel like you're holding yourself back, that's a sign that you got somebody there making judgment calls on you within you, not outside of you. I mean, it's a lot easier to see somebody coming up on your left or right that wants to take you down than it is to realize that there's a person inside of you that kind of wants to take you down. It's involved with your ego. It's trying to kind of destroy you. It's trying to make you unhappy. It's trying to create havoc in your life. You know, make you feel a little regretful of the things that you haven't accomplished. You know, the next thing is that you find fault in yourself first. You're the first one to find fault in yourself. Oh, God, I didn't do this well.
That's me. Remember when we started off the show? I'm my own worst critic because I'm a perfectionist, and I expect myself to just do it right the very first time or also get angry with myself.
And why is that?
Well, like I said, I have high standards for myself. So when I don't do something the right way or the best way right off the bat, then, I can really get down on myself, and I really have to kind of fight that urge.
And that perfectionist urge, I think, is an interesting too. I think that's an interesting situation. Being a perfectionist is part of that inner critic.
Yes.
Because perfect isn't really possible. It's not possible, but when we try to live up to something that's not possible, what happens? We fall short. When we fall short, what happens? We get angry. When we get angry, what happens? We get depressed. When we get depressed, what happens? We stay home and we don't try to do anything else because we know we're not going to do it that well.
Because I think you know me, actually. I mean, I have a lot of pride in my competence as a producer and a sound engineer. And so sometimes I can be kind of sensitive when I feel like I'm being criticized, or if I do make a mistake, and look, we all make mistakes, but if I do make a mistake, then it's like, you know, I can be sensitive to somebody coming on too strong on me, because I already know what I did, and I don't need, you know, I don't need you to yell at me here. I'm already
yelling at myself.
Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. You know, I'm already yelling at myself.
I don't need to hear it again.
I don't need you to.
It's like when you're in the car and you got a backseat driver, right?
Oh, that. You know? I cannot stay. You know, it's like one of these days I'm going to get the James Bond car. You know where you push the button and the seat, you know, flings the person out of the passenger seat or whatever. You know what I'm talking about? I'm going to trick out my car one of these days to do that because. I mean, I would rather listen to fingernail scrape at a chalkboard
come on, nobody.
Than to somebody to backseat drive me. I can't stand somebody telling me how to drive.
Well, that's kind of the same as having that inner critic and then having somebody else tell you about what you did wrong. Is that you turned the wrong way. You know it. And then all of a sudden that person goes, you know, you turned the wrong way.
Sherlock.
I know, man, but yeah. I can't make you turn for another mile. I get it. And that person's like, well, golly, we got to go another mile out of the way. And that's really what it is, because when we have this inner critic, we don't really need somebody else beating us up.
Yeah.
We already got this taken care of right over
right.
here. And the problem is that we don't stop. You know, that one thing happened, and the other person's going to let it go. The backseat driver's going to eventually, hopefully, let it go. But at the same point in time, we're going to keep going with that. We made the wrong turn. You know, the inner critic, well, you can't even drive anyway. You're not even good at that. So, a lot of times with this inner critic, too, that's what we feel out of place. And we worry when we're around others. We worry that we're not going to be as beautiful, as pretty, as smart, as intelligent, as liked. I mean, you know, I see it all the time. I went to a big event yesterday. And it was a really nice event, and it was for a good cause. But, you know, there was a lot of people there. There was probably about 700 people there. And out of those 700, about 600 women, and a lot of it's society women. You know?
Wow, so out of 700 people, 600 women.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it was kind of a big women's type donational charity type thing.
Okay,
but there was a couple of spouses that were there. Most of it was a daytime luncheon type thing.
I was going to say, it's either that or the 50 Shades of Grey premiere.
I heard
that 70% of the audience was female.
And that is crazy. We'll talk about that another time. But yes, exactly. But I know why that is. You women out there are bored with your marriages and wanting somebody to, I don't know, have a little fun with, I guess. But anyway, let's get back to this concept of the ladies' luncheon. So there we are at the luncheon. And I remember seeing a lot of society people in there. We talked and everything. But you would see certain women in there that didn't feel comfortable with being there. You know, they were looking for their friends. Maybe they were on the phone by the front doors, texting to see if their friends had gotten there yet, waiting it out. And our inner critic can be that person going, man, you're not going to know anybody here. You might as well just wait by that front door because you're not going to know anybody here.
Yeah.
You stand out like a sore thumb. I can't believe you wore that outfit. I can't believe you wore that.
And that's it, that's the, you know, to heck with all this, you know, sisterly bonding stuff, right? I mean, women are the fiercest critics of other women.
Yeah, but I'm talking about your own critic. You're your own critic.
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, so it's like, I can't believe she wore that, you know, whatever, you know.
And a lot of times when they think that, guess what? They're internalizing their judgment saying, I can't believe I wore this.
Yeah.
And so it goes outward, right? It creates this outward spawn. It's like your judge becomes their judge. And all of a sudden, now you're judging everybody because you think everybody's judging me anyway. They're all making fun of my outfit, so I'm going to go make fun of theirs. You know, I can't believe what she's wearing. Oh, she totally wore that last month when I saw her at that event. You know, and so it's being out of place. It's feeling out of place. It's worrying if you're going to fit in. What about you fear new things? You know, your critic wants you to fear things that are new, that aren't the humdrum, the things that you've never done before because it's out of your element. It's out of your wheelhouse, actually.
I tend to do that.
You do?
Yeah. I'm uncomfortable in new situations.
See, I love new situations.
And not me. I mean, because, you know, once I get something broken in, it's like, the Linus blanket, you know, it's warm and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Kermit there that you're playing with.
I bring my action figures with me.
Would you put that down already?
When I go any studio I go to, I bring my action figures with me. Go with me.
I know. That's probably a symptom of some sort of sickness. We'll just have to, you know, diagnose it later. But anyway.
Oh God.
So when I'm forced to step outside of my comfort zone, you know, get out of the warm blanket, as it were, then I feel uncomfortable.
That's interesting. Why do you think that way? Because I know I felt uncomfortable before with new things, and most time it was my inner critic saying that this isn't going to go well.
Well, I for me anyway, I think it's because it's the fear of the unknown. I don't know 100% sure how it's going to turn out. And you know how I joke with you, I like to plan my spontaneity.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that kind of goes back to my, inner critic perfectionist type thing. If I don't know 100% how it's going to turn out.
But we never know what it's going to do.
Then I'm not sure I want to get started in the first place.
But we never know 100% what anything's going to turn out.
Which is true. You know, so that's the internal battle.
Yeah.
That's raging in my head, see.
And also that internal battle might be, too, because you're insecure about the situation, not knowing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Maybe that can also transfer that voice into... I need to know the outcome of this.
Right.
I have to know the outcome. If I know the outcome, I'll feel more comfortable. This will be more,
exactly.
Yeah, more my speed.
Exactly.
And because, I mean, we're old enough in an age that, you really have to be aware of that critic and what they're saying. And to become aware of that, that's a totally different ballgame. And we'll get to that later on in this hour. But, you have to be able to understand that you have it. And I think we're getting there. And so you feel like you're held back by yourself. You find fault in yourself first. You're the first one to say that you did something wrong. You feel out of place, right? And you worry about, what the others around you might think about you. And you fear new things. So when we return, we're talking more about some of the symptoms of knowing that you have that inner critic. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in, two shakes.
Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. We've been talking about that inner critic, that inner judge that you have in your life that's patrolling and deciding on everything that you've been doing. And, we've been talking about those symptoms that can indicate the fact that, yes, indeed, you do have your own critic, because everybody does. I mean, let's not BS ourselves tonight. Everybody has it, but to what degree? And right before the break, we talked about how we feel one of the symptoms is feeling held back by ourselves. And that's a big deal, because I've felt that many times before, realizing, yes, there might have been people around me that might not be helping me so much, but I was actually holding myself back from trying to find out if I could do something or not, based on the fear of not being able to do it and based on that inner critic saying, you know what, it's probably not worth trying. I remember the last one I picked up on what my critic was saying, which was very interesting, was, it's not even worth trying that much. There's only one other woman on that station. I mean, why would you even want to try for that station? I mean, you'd be the only, come on. I mean, they obviously don't value women on that station.
Yeah, I mean, I know
you'd be the
about.
Only one. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, you think you're going to go against the aristocracy? You think you're going to walk through this and make this happen just because of you? And I literally was like, well, I won't even bother. And now I'm like, what was I thinking? Now I'm going to revisit that. That was a few days ago. But sometimes we can allow this to go on for weeks, for months, for years. I mean, I've been in positions when I've been younger that I felt that way and maybe not acted on something in a timely manner at all. And some of that can become regret. And I've had regret before in things that I don't like regret that much. And I don't really want to live in that space that much. So I'm really working on a daily basis to overcome my internal and inner critic myself. You find fault in yourself first. That's another thing. You feel out of place and you worry about what others around you think. And, you fear doing new things. And I think one of the biggest things, too, that me and Bill were talking about off on break is that you feel others are more qualified.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But you don't even know their qualifications, which is so funny. I mean, sometimes you can make snap judgments based on the fact that, well, so-and-so's got a bigger billboard, or so-and-so is on at a better time, or so-and-so has been on for two more years. And so you make these judgment calls based on nothing. I mean, you just make it because you got to have something to say, oh, they're better than me. I might as well not even try. And, you just feel like they got to be more qualified. Maybe they went to a better college than you did in your mind. Maybe that's a better college. Oh, they went to Stanford and I went to UT. Well, I don't even know. I can't even hold a candle to Stanford. And, and I think that's a big deal right there, is that we actually disqualify ourselves. And you don't think you have enough schooling. You don't think you have enough education. And we talked about that in the first hour of this show, is that not thinking that you have enough education and enough schooling is a big deal. That's something that's hard, because it's actually a tangible thing that you feel like you need.
You know what I tell myself when I get when I start having that kind of doubt creep in? Because, you know, like I said, up until just recently, I did not finish college. I mean, I started it, but I left early to get into the insurance business.
Right.
But there's two other college dropouts that, you know, they did reasonably well. One of them is Bill Gates, and the other was Michael Dell.
Yeah.
You know?
And they did pretty good.
They did fairly well for themselves, you know? So just saying, you know, that scrap of paper doesn't necessarily mean you're smart.
No.
That scrap of paper just means that, you know, you had the perseverance to kind of stick it out. Unless, so like I said, in my case, and yeah, okay, you know what? Hey, quite frankly, I'm going to compare myself to those two. You know, we had opportunities come our way that were just too good to pass up.
True.
And so instead of incurring another year and a half of college debt, mm-hmm. I decided to take advantage of it. And it worked out for me.
Well, it definitely worked out. And you made it work out. I mean, it's kind of like, playing pro ball and then going back to college,
Yeah.
I mean, you did it. You followed through. You got your degree. Now, whether or not that degree helps you or hurts you, I don't know. I mean, it is kind of just a media type piece of paper that, we've all bought into lately. I mean, I can't believe the cost of colleges nowadays are absolutely insane. I actually was talking to a client the other day about how she's putting her kid through school, and this particular school is $65,000 a year.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah. And it's not Harvard and it's not Stanford. Let me put it that way. and that's insane. That's insane. So you're going to pay 65 grand a year just to make yourself feel better that you went to this school. So it is what it is. You have to believe in yourself in that situation. And yes, schooling might help you feel like you have a leg up, but you got to have the basis of knowledge to begin with. You have a difficult time being yourself because you feel yourself isn't good enough. And I think that's the bottom line here. Is that when your inner critic is going off and you're listening to it, or at least you're following what it's saying by doing things that aren't good for you, i.e. you need to be taking care of this and that, and instead you're down at the bar, okay? You might be smoking weed, doing something that's not helping you get to that next level because, in the back
gaming.
There... Gaming. Yeah, in the back there, yeah. you believe in this stuff, hook, line, and sinker, so why not go do that? Because you're not going to make it. It's not going to get good anyway. I mean, you're just going to waste your time. And that's what it is that you, bottom line, it's difficult to be yourself because you feel that yourself is not good enough. And that's where most of us in this lifetime deal with, is this issue is paramount right there.
I love her to death. I don't want our listeners to think that I hate my mom. I don't. Just the opposite. I love my mom to death. But she's a perfect example of what we're talking about. She does not even bother getting started doing most things because she already knows how this is going to turn out. She already knows it's not going to happen, and my mom is the champ at, she has an excuse for the reason why she makes excuses. Let's put it that way.
A lot of people have,
mom, why don't you give this a try? Well, Because of this, that person's going to take one look at me and she'll come up with just a whole litany of excuses that a lot of times I just end up throwing up my hands. It's okay, Mom,
You can't argue that because it's no logic there. You can't argue that.
Right.
I mean, you'd have to get into her psyche and say, well, the reason why you think this way is because you feel this, this, and that. You don't feel worthy of having success, so you're not going to believe that there's a possibility.
And by the way, this is a woman who put herself through college with two teenage boys.
It's a lot.
And holding down a job.
But it's interesting when the critic is going on and on and on, and the older and older you get, and if you don't put a stop to this, like what I'm talking about tonight, if you don't slow it down, if you don't see it, guess what? It gets out of hand. It gets really out of hand, and it causes a lot of problems. And like Bill was saying, his mom is very, very intelligent.
Very intelligent.
Put herself through school with these two kids, took care of all this stuff. I mean, think about it. That's a lot going on. You got kids to take care of, you're putting yourself through college, you're doing all this stuff. You got to have some sort of level of, belief, but at the same point in time, that critic, when it keeps going and going and going, and you're in your 40s or 50s, or maybe even your 60s, if you don't stop it soon, you're going to be living with a lot of regret. because unfortunately it becomes out of control. It's just like a bully, and it's just like somebody that's got too much power. If somebody has full power over you all the time, then they're going to take just a little bit more. I'm going to take a little bit more because I know what? I can get it. I can get it from you because you're easy. You're an easy target. Every time I come back to get a little more power, guess what? You give it to me. You give it to me every time. And you know what? I'm so smooth. I'm such a smooth operator. You don't even know that you're giving it to me.
Smooth operator.
I'm Barry White, baby. I'm your inner critic, and I'm Barry White, and I'm here to tell you how bad you are and what you can never step up to. You can't ever step up to this plate. And so when we return, I'm going to tell you how you can recognize them and what you can do to slow down this inner critic and to be able to focus and realize what's truly happening and slow down the hands of time when it comes to this and be able to get some of your power back. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
I can lift you up. I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be.
Get in here and give us your perspective. We're listening. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, we've been talking about that inner critic. We've been talking about that inner judge, that jury, that executioner. You know, I recently met my critic in a dream. He was an odd character, rough around the edges, actually snarly. You know, God bless him. You know, I mean, you might not actually ever run into your critic. You might not ever see them, but you can feel them. You can hear a voice of constant doubt and realize it's obviously separate from yourself. You know, when you begin to dial into your thoughts and you see that these thoughts are punishing you, creating doubt, browbeating you, or judging you, and when your thoughts are created in these spaces, it's a direct sign that you are under the influence of your inner critic. You're under the influence. You're taking the drug, baby. You're doing it. And a lot of times it's hard for us to realize that, but our thoughts are supposed to support us. They're not supposed to take us down. So what do we do? What do we do to actually slow down this inner critic, to actually stop wielding it and giving it power over us? How do we do this? I mean, we've been going through our whole life allowing this to happen. So how do we do it now? And I have a couple of pieces of advice tonight, and I think these are going to be very important when it comes to eliminating regret from your life, but also when getting your power back. You got to begin to listen to your thoughts. You got to begin to listen to your thoughts. What does that mean? You got to actually hear them. You got to see them, for that matter. You know, most of us let that mind of ours chatter away without ever checking what the chattering is saying, without checking it out. What's going on in my mind? You can't begin to control what's going on in your mind and clean it up if you don't know what's being said, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, if I'm chattering away all the time, and you know you have friends and family.
Not you, actually. I mean, you don't chatter.
Yeah, well, my mind is actually quite quiet. I've learned how to actually quiet the mind, and that's something that I'm getting at right now, is that when I don't speak, there's nothing going on in my head. I mean, really, honestly, I can hear my inner critic come from a mile away now because they walk too loud. Okay, I used to not be able to hear this.
Clack, clack, clack.
Oh, yeah, it's like click, 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 yeah. Click, you know, or maybe they have Birkenstocks on and they're being sneaky. But, or tipping toeing.
Right.
But no, it's true, or ballet slippers. Okay, get me off that shoe subject. But yeah, when you start realizing that the chatter is saying something, because I know a lot of people out there say, I have a hard time sleeping, I can't shut my mind off.
And I have that problem.
Okay.
I have that problem.
Well, you need to start looking at what's being said during that time. Because usually, in the dark hours when you should be sleeping, or in the morning, or is when the inner critic is at its best. It is telling you some great stuff to really take you down. And when you start realizing what that chatter is saying, and the only way you can do it is to actually listen to your thoughts. Don't just let it go willy-nilly. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, it's like putting a radio station on and sticking a headset in the radio box and sticking one of those up in your ear as loud as possible and walking around all day and not paying attention to anything that's being said. That's what you're allowing your inner critic to do morning, noon, and night. And so you got to first be able to listen to your thoughts and hear them. Actually hear what is being said. okay? Because right now, your inner critic's getting away with all kinds of stuff because it's like you're at a crowded restaurant and you're hearing the table next to you, but you're really not paying attention. Well, that's what you're doing in your own mind, okay? So the inner critic's getting away with murder right now, acting like your mind's racing tonight, just can't seem to get any sleep. You know, mind's racing today, just can't seem to get any rest or get any work done. Well, guess what that is? That's your inner critic going off about something. So you got to start realizing, what is it? Slow those thoughts down. Look at them. Examine them. Hear them for what they truly are. If you have to, write it down.
I was just about to ask you, would it be helpful to write it down?
In the beginning, it can be very helpful.
Okay.
Because you can put it all in perspective. It really is like a dialogue. So if you can slow the dialogue down just enough to realize there is a dialogue, and if you're actually honest with yourself, you can actually clue into that dialogue and realize what's being said. Because it's all about you. So don't worry. It's not about other people. It's all about you. So slow down the thoughts. Actually hear your thoughts. Actually see them. Write them down. Do it. And do it until you actually get a hold of this, because it's going to have to be like clockwork for you. We've gone too long in our lifetime to not have to actually regurgitate something, to do it over and over again, to be able to make that into a habit, a good habit. Okay, this is a really, really good habit, because this habit is creating your own peace of mind, and it's slowing that inner critic down, and it's getting your power back as you're a good person, okay? So you're able to write those things down. And the second thing is to realize immediately, when you're not wanting to go somewhere, you're not wanting to do something, why aren't you putting yourself out there? Why aren't you highlighting your assets? Why are you trying to hide? When we feel like we need to avoid something, a lot of times that's because we are being manipulated by what? By our critic, okay? Because it's funny why we do this. It's very interesting, because we all have our own brand of critic. We all have our own brand. We got our own spokesperson. They have their own uniform. They talk their own talk. They do their own thing. And guess what? It's all about us. And so if you can understand where it's coming from, you can begin to slow it down.
You know, Ashley, it almost sounds like you're advising us to put together our own personal resume. You know, because if you put together a resume and you are going to apply for a new job, then not only are you going to list your skill set, but you also phrase it in the best possible way, right? I mean, you know, so maybe kind of sort of, you know, we should have our own personal resume in the back of our minds, you know, to answer our inner critic for. So it's like, you know, well, you know, I'm intelligent, I'm smart, I'm good looking, and, you know, I'm good at multitasking, I'm good at this and this and such and such. And that way, you know, maybe it might be a good idea to, you know, whenever your internal critic comes calling, you can just pull out the old resume.
Well, that's a good idea, but a lot of times people don't even know that they have it right now, and they're not even listening to it. So they don't know. We can't even have them fight it until they know that it's there. You
okay.
know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I agree with you. And in that, it would be like positive affirmation resume, right? That would be kind of like that.
And of course, you know, and do like everybody else does. Embellish your resume. I embellish mine.
Well, you know, feel highly about yourself, you know?
So, I mean, it's supposed to accentuate the positive, and so why not embellish it?
Well, I agree with you, and so that kind of gets us to our next step. So once we're able to hear the thoughts, and we actually hear them, and we know what's being said about us, okay, because there are actual words being said. It's in your own mind, okay? So there are words. They're not symbols. It's not Chinese symbols or hieroglyphics or anything. That is actually words. So once you realize that, and let's say you decide to go to the next level of writing it down, which is fine too, because it can really help. But remember that when you begin catching the comments, you got to eventually do something, because you can register it and understand that this is being said, but you got to stop the loop. So how do we stop the loop? We stop the loop by catching the comments, and I like to tell my clients that once you catch the comment, a lot of times you want to see it. So sometimes when we write it down, we see it. Sometimes in our heads, when we see the words, we actually see them. And you can shoot them down like skeet. Anybody that's ever shot skeet, it's like a clay disc. And you basically, the clay disc gets swung out into the air, and you shoot down the skeet. You actually blow it up.
Or maybe just pretend it's World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft.
You know, and start shooting, you know, the the monsters and
or
stuff
asteroids
like that.
Or something like that. Or catching them.
Asteroids. You just dated yourself there.
Or catching them like on a hook. Like, what about your fishing and you catch each little comet that's negative on a hook and you throw it out? So what you want to do in the beginning is take out the negative comments, take out the critical comments. You got to take those out first before we start adding positive ones in.
Now, very quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Should we listen to the constructive criticism?
There's a difference right now because there is no constructive criticism for most people right now.
Okay.
I mean, because I see what you're saying, but most of that's disguised in criticism. It really is. I mean, there are some of that, but you got to get rid of all the negative stuff first before we can decide what is actually beneficial and what's not. Because right now, most people, it's almost like a cesspool. They're like in the middle of this pool, and all it is, you know, something happened to basically the sewer system and they're standing in it right now and they're like, well, is that criticism? That's okay. Or is this, what do you think? Well, no, we got to clean the pool up first, make it all clean water that you can swim in. And then we can devise what is unique criticism, what's okay, what's beneficial and what's not.
So tune in next week is what you're trying to say.
Well, we could talk about that next week. But yeah, you gotta take these thoughts out. You gotta clean up your mind. Okay. So if you think about like a lake that's been polluted for years upon years, and it's got all kinds of branches and crap in there, it's got all kinds of garbage and fast food bottles and cans and beer bottles and all that stuff. I mean, you know, the fish have already died, what have you. You got to clean up, you got to dredge that lake first, right, before it's clean. And just like your mind, it's all these negative thoughts that are in there that you actually have to clean out. So we got to clean out one by one, take them out, put them in the trash can, go recycle them, do what you want to do with it. And then at that point in time, after we get rid of the negative, we can add the positive, because you can't rewrite a record on something that's not writable. You can't sit there and try to create or clean the water up when it's really just sewer water. You can't do anything about that. You're going to have to actually unpollute that water from the inside out, which would mean to, you know, use oxygenation, osmosis, reverse osmosis, whatever you need. In this situation, it's about cleaning out your thoughts, seeing them for what they are, identifying them for what they are, and then taking them out and cleaning that area. And eventually, guess what? When you do this every day, eventually your mind's going to start to slow down. The chatter is going to start to slow down. And eventually, within a month of doing this on a daily basis, the chatter will stop. There won't be any more chatter. It's amazing. I sleep great. Okay, I sleep wonderful. Yeah, there is no chatter. It's gone, because guess what the chatter was? The chatter was just putting me down. And, you know, if you even think about the chatter of just being chatter, well, it's keeping you up. It's taking you off base about what you need to do. It's not helping you. It's not helping you at all. It's hurting you. So that chatter needs to stop. And the only way to stop the chatter is to check it, to know what the chatter is saying, and to eliminate it. And on another show, we'll be talking about how you add positive thoughts in, but you got to do this for about a month before we can even begin to rewrite this record, because we've all been treating ourselves so badly. We've all been our worst critic for so long that it's just second nature. I think this was a great show, Bill. I think it was very informative and funny.
And I learned a lot about it because, like I said, I think this subject was tailor-made for me. So thanks very much, Ashley.
Wonderful show. And we'll have a great show for you again tomorrow. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in three shakes.